question to both of you is, regardless of the current rhetoric, would either of you name one positive thing that you respect in one another?
I respect his children. His children are incredibly able and devoted, and I think that says a lot about Donald. I don't agree with nearly anything else he says or does, but I do respect that.
I will say this about Hillary. She doesn't quit. She doesn't give up. I respect that. I tell it like it is. She's a fighter. I disagree with much of what she's fighting for. But she does fight hard, and she doesn't quit, and she doesn't give up. And I consider that to be a very good trait.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and today is Monday. It's October 10th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day, and welcome to another business week. As we move into mid-October, earnings season is upon us. The election season, as you just heard, is in full swing. Another big debate. You're going to be hearing a lot about the debate this morning. So we're going to try to avoid politics as much as we can as we move forward today. Let's start first at the WGN Market Desk. That's always a safe place, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. And the numbers look rather decent this morning, considering it's a Monday. Dow futures are up about 54 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are up about 7 and 15 points, respectively. Overseas last night, the Nikkei finished lower. The European market's still open. The DAX and FTSE seem to be leading the way this morning. Other markets are lower. Back in this country, crude oil trading $49.61 a barrel. It's off just about 25 cents this morning in early trading on global trading around the world. Some of the news making headlines since you went to bed last night. There is a report this morning. The Nobel Economics has been announced, the Nobel Prize for Economics. If you've followed this, Oliver Hart and Bang Holmstrom have won the Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences for their contributions to contract theory. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, within the last hour, has awarded the prize, says their theories are valuable to the understanding of real-life contracts and institutions, as well as potential pitfalls in contract design. They get about $1 million apiece. That is the big story globally in terms of the economy. You'll be hearing a lot about these two gentlemen, but I'm sure you will probably, if you're in the business world or somewhere else, sign a contract today, and that is very important. In other news this morning, we're watching a couple of things happening globally and back in this country as well. In terms of news, there's been a federal appeals court ruling opening the door for construction to resume a small stretch of construction on the four-state Dakota Access Pipeline while it considers an appeal by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Also today, an Australian-Chinese consortium has offered to buy Australia's largest cattle empire, a bid welcomed by the Australian Agriculture Minister. They've been having some tough times. Just a couple of the stories that could be driving things today. Could be a slow day. I know some of your kids probably have today off from school, but it is a full business day generally. We'll run down some of the other closures for what is still a holiday. Wall Street investors, global markets realized long ago Columbus did not discover America. So it's 5:11 on the CEO Spotlight this morning. How do you look? Are you getting dressed this morning, heading off to work? You got a nice suit on. Where'd you get it at? There's a trend of custom clothing where you actually can go and sit and relax and have somebody dress you based on what you look like. If you've ever been shopping on your own, boy, I hate this. I hate shopping for clothes. This might be the answer. And our CEO Spotlight today is the founder of the clothier that's been in the Chicago area for more than 50 years. Sonny Bolani is with us from Bolani Custom Clothiers. And Sonny, welcome to the Opening Bell. Welcome to CEO Spotlight. I guess I have one question. You know, I'm dressed in a polo. You're dressed in a suit, a jacket and nice shirt this morning. Who is in the fashion world? Who's the making the fashion sense? What is cool? What is right? What are business people wearing? What should I be wearing?
So I always think that you want to dress for the different situation that you're in. And so my goal is, you know, if I'm going to a barbecue, if I'm going to somewhere casual, I'm obviously not going to wear a sport coat or suit. But I always try and be the better dressed person in the room or the best dressed person in the room, given the situation. And so I think that holds true to any situation. And today, quite frankly, I didn't put on a sport coat because I wanted to – I was going into a business meeting where I needed to shake someone's hand. I did it because it made me feel great. When I put on the jacket and it feels differently and I feel more confident walking into a scenario. And so I don't think that changes over time. I think when you put on that clothing to make you feel and look great – inside and out, I think it really is impactful.
And so how big is that from a message you send to people? You have obviously a lot of experience in this. Is it about comfort or is it about style?
I think it's about confidence.
Okay.
I think comfort and style go hand in hand. And if obviously you don't have those things there, you don't feel as confident because you're not walking into a situation where you, quote unquote, own the room. And I like to do that whenever possible.
Yeah, one of the good examples that I can use of this is after 30 years, American Airlines decided they were going to have new uniforms for the newly merged American and U.S. Airways. And the pilots immediately started complaining that they were itchy and they weren't up to their standards. So, again, you have it goes to confidence. These pilots don't feel as confident as they did before, even with new clothing.
Yep. So you have to have something that's certainly a comfortable fabric and certainly something that feels and looks good. And, you know, it's funny you bring up a pilot because I think that's one of the most respected professions out there. People always look at a pilot and they look at them with a little bit of awe. And so part of that is the uniform and those wings that they have on the jacket and et cetera. And taking that away and having a different look really would diminish that feel and that look for what you – when you look at a pilot, you kind of expect that. Like when you walk into a doctor's office, you expect that white coat. It all goes hand in hand.
You are at the forefront of this newest trend that seems to be catching on in a big way called custom clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to us what the trend is about and what it is, what custom clothing, when you use an umbrella to describe it, means.
So custom clothing has been around forever. It has been around for centuries, and it really started to take off. Actually, it's interesting because we start to see a lot of the dress casual in the late 90s and early 2000s with a lot of the internet stocks and things like that where these guys were setting the trend of what people were looking like. Well, a lot of the department stores out there start to cut their selection and style of fabrics and inventory and et cetera because they just weren't selling as many. And so what ended up happening was the specific category of custom clothing really exploded because there was a lot of that marketplace that wasn't able to get what they were looking for. And so they came to custom to be able to get that style and selection. And so as the market started to grow, people started to realize more and more that they were able to personalize their garments. And that's really, really caught on. And so, for example, you'll see on my jacket, I have got different buttonholes that are a little bit different. And it allows me to express my personal style. On my shirt, too, I've got different colored buttonholes and things like that allow me to express my personal style. And I think that's what's really exploded about the category is that people want to nowadays express their own personal style. They don't necessarily want to be tied to a label or a brand. They want to have their own look and their own feel. And, you know, they want to obviously go with someone that's got quality. So that's where the branding and value is important. But at the same time, they want to be themselves.
In our CEO spotlight today, a very well-dressed Sunny Bolani. And we'll continue our conversation. Some tips, too, about how maybe the way you dress could help you land some really good business or make some contracts or even just get a drink at a bar. We'll have more of our conversation with Sunny Bolani coming up. You can follow at Bolani Custom on Twitter, and we'll have more with Sunny in just a few minutes. Right now, though, we want to get you updated on traffic on this Monday morning over at Traffic Central, and Susan Berkus is with us. Susan, is it sort of a holiday-type travel or a lot of people working today?
Well, we're hoping it's a holiday-type travel day, but you never know, Steve. Never know. Right now, there is some good news. Additional burn circle work that was scheduled to begin today on the Eisenhower around Congress Parkway's postponed. IDOT is responding to a driver heading the wrong way on the inbound Edens near Tower Road, so use caution there. Outbound Dan Ryan slowing up at 95th Street. That's due to construction. It'll be picked up by 6 a.m. Other expressways and tollways moving at posted speeds. Eastbound I-80 is backed up at Seneca Road with an overturned semi blocking one lane. And at Route 53, the ramps at Palatine Road are closed for construction. Susan Berkus, WGN Traffic Central.
Traffic is sponsored by Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
Allstate has your tickets to the sold-out show, The Return of Thomas Jefferson, presented by Conasec and Dillon Trial Attorneys. Enter to win VIP tickets and meet and greet with Thomas Jefferson and John Williams at WGNradio.com/contests. Sponsored by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands.
This is a great place for one-stop shopping.
Great prices.
Lots of value.
It's your everything store.
At Blaine's Farm and Fleet, you'll always find quality products, friendly service, and low prices. What else will you find? Let's ask our customers why they like shopping at Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
I buy a lot of work clothes, boots.
I've had good experience with the people who work here.
He likes to look at things for the farm, farm equipment.
Fencing, wire.
Bedding and milk replacer for my calves.
Right now at Blaine's Farm and Fleet, save on Chicago Heights steel studded T-posts available in 5, 6, and 7-foot lengths. They start at $329. Heavy-duty bull bale feeders from Bale & Country are only $299.99. And grade 70 transport binder chains from Cook start at $29.99.
Just whatever a farmer would need out there, they pretty much have.
I think I find terrific value at Farm and Fleet. Every time I come here, I can find exactly what I need at a terrific price.
Farm and Fleet is one of our favorite places to go.
And be sure to check out the newest Blaine's Farm and Fleet store, now open in Elgin, Illinois.
Gilkey's known for quality. And I think when people look for windows, Gilkey's definitely on the top of the list.
Mike Gilkey has put together a window that is literally a world-class product. We have the best frame technology and the best glass technology.
When you put the Gilkey window side by side with the competitor's windows, there is an obvious difference.
It is top of the line from start to finish, from sales all the way to service.
And we're the marketer, manufacturer, and installer of these windows, so that means a lot.
Hi, I'm Mike Gilkey. I wanted you to hear from my employees because they are the face and heart of Gilkey Windows. Our employees are family and so are our customers. If your home needs new windows, become part of the Gilkey family today. Save $150 per window and save $300 per sliding patio door. Visit us online at Gilkey.com or call us today at 1-888-3-GILKEY. That's 1-888-3-GILKEY.
Troy Murray here. For nearly 120 years, Chicago's own Nuveen has worked to live up to the highest standards of investment excellence, committed to delivering lasting value, whatever the markets may bring. Like generations of Chicagoans, they've watched our Blackhawks strive for excellence, whatever the season may bring. At Nuveen, they couldn't be more proud to support our champion Blackhawks as they work to keep Chicago the home of hockey excellence and bring the cup back to our city in 2017. Visit Nuveen.com today.
Are you paying more out-of-pocket for healthcare these days? Well, here's some good news. Illinois Bone and Joint Institute offers high-quality orthopedic care that often costs less. From sports medicine and arthritis treatment to joint replacement, spine care and rehab, the experts at IBJI will get you back to the things you love, affordably. They now have new locations in Barrington, serving Lake, McHenry, and Kane counties. Learn more at IBJI.com. IBJI. Move better. Live better.
Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you'd like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 on WGN-TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, some stocks of local interest this morning. We're closely watching a couple of stocks, including Peabody Energy Corporation, which is up almost 1.5% this morning. The Boeing Company's off just a little. They sold quite a few jets over the weekend, about 60 jets to a company based in, if I'm not mistaken, Iraq. Afghanistan. My notes are not in front of me. It was a foreign corporation, but they sold about 70 jets. Also this morning, Sears in the top of the list here, off about 2.5%. Sears Holdings Corporation, some stocks of local interest on the Associated Bank Market Desk. 5:21 on the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks were mixed today. Traders watched the second U.S. presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. The Japanese and Hong Kong markets were closed for the holidays. U.S. markets are closed for Columbus Day. On Friday, U.S. stocks ended lower, giving the market its first weekly decline in a month. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 28 points on Friday. The S&P 500 lost about 7 points, and the NASDAQ composite declined about 14 points. Real estate and phone companies extended declines. Data showed U.S. employers added 156,000 jobs last month. Job growth has averaged 178,000 a month so far this year, down from last year's pace. Samsung says it's adjusting production output of Galaxy Note 7 to ensure quality following more reports of fires. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, 522, as we continue our conversation this morning with Sonny Bolani. He is the CEO. He's in charge of things over at Bolani Custom Clothiers. They put you in a chair, make you feel comfortable, and make custom clothing for you. It's a trend that's catching on, getting ready to open a location in the Dallas area, too, by the way. Sonny with us this morning here. Sonny, so I get, you know, you've
arrived here today in a nice sport coat. I'm in a polo. Who's the one that's on the cusp of fashion? Is it me? Is it you? Are polos going out? What's dress in our workplace now?
So I always think that you want to dress for the different situation that you're in. And so my goal is, you know, if I'm going to a barbecue, if I'm going to somewhere casual, I'm obviously not going to wear a sport coat or suit, but I always try and be the better dressed person in the room or the best dressed person in the room, given the situation. And so I think that holds true to any situation. And today, quite frankly, I didn't put on a sport coat because I wanted to. I was going into a business meeting where I needed to shake someone's hand. I did it because it made me feel great. When I put on the jacket and it feels differently and I feel more confident walking into a scenario. And so I don't think that changes over time. I think when you put on that clothing to make you feel and look great inside and out, I think it really is impactful.
And so how big is that from a message you send to people? You have obviously a lot of experience in this. Is it about comfort or is it about style?
I think it's about confidence.
Okay.
I think comfort and style go hand in hand. And if obviously you don't have those things there, you don't feel as confident because you're not walking into a situation where you, quote unquote, own the room. And I like to do that whenever possible.
Yeah, one of the good examples that I can use of this is after 30 years, American Airlines decided they were going to have new uniforms for the newly merged American and U.S. Airways. And the pilots immediately started complaining that they were itchy and they weren't up to their standards. So, again, you have it goes to confidence. These pilots don't feel as confident as they did before, even with new clothing.
Yep. So you have to have something that's certainly a comfortable fabric and certainly something that feels and looks good. And, you know, it's funny you bring up a pilot because I think that's one of the most respected professions out there. People always look at a pilot and they look at them with a little bit of awe. And so part of that is the uniform and those wings that they have on the jacket and et cetera. And taking that away and having a different look really would diminish that feel and that look for what you – when you look at a pilot, you kind of expect that. Like when you walk into a doctor's office, you expect that white coat. It all goes hand in hand.
You are at the forefront of this newest trend that seems to be catching on in a big way called custom clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to us what the trend is about and what it is, what custom clothing, when you use an umbrella to describe it, means.
So custom clothing has been around forever. It has been around for centuries, and it really started to take off. Actually, it's interesting because we start to see a lot of the dress casual in the late 90s and early 2000s with a lot of the internet stocks and things like that, where these guys were setting the trend of what people were looking like. Well, a lot of the department stores out there start to cut their selection and style of fabrics and inventory and et cetera because they just weren't selling as many. And so what ended up happening was the specific category of custom clothing really exploded because there was a lot of that marketplace that wasn't able to get what they were looking for. And so they came to custom to be able to get that style and selection. And so as the market started to grow, people started to realize more and more that they were able to personalize their garments. And that's really, really caught on. And so, for example, you'll see on my jacket, I have got different buttonholes that are a little bit different. And it allows me to express my personal style. On my shirt, too, I've got different colored buttonholes and things like that that allow me to express my personal style. And I think that's what's really exploded about the category is that people want to nowadays express their own personal style. They don't necessarily want to be tied to a label or a brand. They want to have their own look and their own feel. And, you know, they want to obviously go with someone that's got quality. So that's where the branding and value is important. But at the same time, they want to be themselves.
And so, I've been using a tailor that has sort of custom clothing. But you're saying it's even more than that. It's having a different look, a different style, a different color, different flair.
Yeah, so the difference between getting something tailored is you're starting with a piece that's already created, right? The thing when you come into a custom clothing company is that you would start with the fabric and you work off that. And then we work off your measurements. So the most important part of a suit is the jacket. And the reason for that is because the resting point is on your shoulders. And if that, everybody's got different shoulder structures and they're not typically made for off the rack. And this, by the way, goes for a shirt as well. But if that shoulder structure is not cut correctly, you're trying to work around that the whole time rather than working to tweak something that's already made from the canvas that's made for your body.
People say oftentimes that they, especially men, I'm one of them that will complain about this, that when we go and do our shopping, the sizes are so different from place to place. There's so few choices to be made. Is that also driving custom clothing?
I'm smiling as you say that. And so it's funny because over the years, a lot of the brands out there that are not custom but traditional retail, they've figured out that sometimes people want to feel good about themselves, and so they do something called size marketing. And so what they do is, let's just say they've got a pair of jeans that's really a 35. Well, they'll market a 32. So when you put them on, you'll feel like you're a 32, and you feel great about it. And so
I knew it.
A lot. It's very true. And so that goes with all segments of clothing. And so throughout the years, you know, sizes have changed depending on what brands really want to make it, and so it's become less and less uniform.
So it's sort of a game that's being played.
That a little
we're
bit
just
of a game.
Aware. And it's unfortunate because it's the last thing that I think a lot of guys want to do is go shopping for clothes. It's something mm-hmm. that they have made, these other people have made, a not fun experience by doing this.
Yeah, so it's funny because that's one of the aspects also that has led to the growth of custom clothing is because once we've got your fabrics and style preferences and your measurements on file, it's super easy. I mean, the way we really try and do it is we take a very hospitality approach towards it for that exact reason you just said, because a lot of guys don't like to shop. And so when you come into one of our showrooms, we've got beer, wine, champagne, and we create a very high-end experience. And I actually have a fabric bar where the clothier is on one side and the client is on the other side. And the reason I did that is because it was one of my favorite places to have an interaction. I love going to a bar and having a drink and, you know, having chit-chat with the bartender and having a very relaxed conversation. So I really tried to emulate that at our showrooms and our stores, so you have this very relaxed, fun environment. Once you've got your measurements on file, you're basically just coming in, meeting with a great, really cool person, having a drink, and picking out your clothing. And you know it's going to fit because we have your measurements.
And you've hit on another part of what makes it so bad for those of us who are not using custom clothing, is that even in the setting where we're going to a really high-end tailor, there's still that pressure to get through, get in, get out, move on. And people, you know, are waiting behind you. You've seems like you're taking that pressure off and making it more of a destination.
Absolutely. And so we try and make it more of a appointment-only type situation. Obviously, if somebody comes in, we'll try and accommodate them as mm-hmm. best as possible. But for the most part, people are blocking out portions of their day, and they're treating this like going to the dentist, going to a meeting with their lawyer or their accountant, et cetera. And it's basically a time for them to just focus on that, get it done. We try and be respectful of their time. So if they want to move through the process quickly, we'll move the process very quickly. But if they want to take time and go through the details, we'll help them through that process as well.
I asked before we started our broadcast today about millennials, because it seems like millennials are driving every segment of business these days. How they're driving this segment, the clothing segment?
Well, I think millennials in general love to personalize things. They love to have their own signature look and style and be different. They don't want to be like everybody else. And so the ability to have your own different signature style on different things, whether or not means a particular buttonhole or sometimes a particular monogram on your shirt. We even do fun stuff like we can put something someone will never even see, something under the collar of your jacket, but it might be a signature catchphrase or something. But you know it's there. And it represents you, and you feel good internally. Millennials are a big driver of that, and they love that type of personal touch.
So give us a sense of how expensive this is. What's the price point on this? Is it something that most people can afford?
So it's not the least expensive thing out there, but at the same time, we're trying to compete with department stores and et cetera. So our suits start at $899, mm-hmm. and our shirts start at $129. And so it's fairly comparable to if you were going to go to Nordstrom, Brooks Brothers, or any of the big department stores and buy something and then have it tailored afterwards and spend that money. You're going to get all those things built in, plus you're going to get the features of the customization as well.
And one of the things that you probably don't add in there is, for the unsuccessful person who's out there shopping, you may go to several different places looking for what you need. If I come to you, you'll be able to help me and not send me to another place or another place?
Essentially, we're saying we're going to hopefully save you time, right, in the process, because we're going to be able to get it right the first time. And then also in the future, for sure, we're going to save a lot of time, because once we have your measurements on file, you don't have to keep chasing your tail and looking for something. We can, you know, we get clients nowadays that we have a high level of trust with that they'll send us a text message and say, hey, I need a navy blue suit and a gray. Can you send me a couple of pictures and et cetera, and then pick out five shirts for me? How easy is that?
Yeah, it's very easy. And also honest, because another place may not tell you how much time it's going to take. And time is money. Mm-hmm. I don't care what business you're in, whether it's, you know, retail or whatever. When you spend your time, that's money, right?
Absolutely. And most of our clients are CEOs, lawyers, salespeople that are busy, and time and definitely is money. And if they're not at the pinnacle of their career, they're trying to get there. And so that image becomes more and more important, and they want to save time and have energy and to be able to do the things they want. And they want to look great and feel confident. So these things all go hand in hand.
So what can you tell us about fashion in the workplace and casually, especially for men? How has it changed? How is it changing?
So earlier, you know, as I said earlier, I don't think you always have to wear a three-piece suit. I don't think you're going to wear a tuxedo on a Tuesday night, right? Like, you've got to dress appropriately for the situation. So if you work in an environment that is more casual, I just think it's important that you still become the best dressed person in that room. And so if that means everyone's wearing dress slacks and shirts, well, have a very tailored look to you and have a great, you know, great pairs of slacks and great fitting shirts that you can wear in terms of a great rotation and every day. And over time, that gets noticed. I think people just naturally gravitate to people that are better dressed.
You were talking about your going out and having this look with the dress coat and even in jeans, the bartender mm-hmm. paying more attention to you and maybe moving you to the front of the line. It's when you dress for success in business and pleasure, right?
Yeah, so I've always noticed this in different aspects. And you know, being in the industry, I've tried it many, many, many times. And so I have been out in a pair of jeans and a polo shirt or whatnot. And then I sometimes go to the exact same bar and to the exact same place. And if I'm wearing a suit or if I'm wearing a sport coat and jeans, you could just tell that the bartender takes care of you first. He looks over to you first. I don't know if it's a subconscious thing or if it's a respect thing because they used to see their parents that way. But I can't tell you how many times it happens where if I'm well-dressed that I tend to get taken care of first, or I tend to get upgraded on a flight or something like that. Maybe it's because they feel like you're in that zone and you belong. And I don't always know if it's a conscious thing. I think some of it is subconscious, but there's a level of confidence that maybe also comes with it too, that you feel better when you walk up.
What are you seeing in terms of the boardroom, the office setting? Is it ties and suits or what?
So even in many aspects, even in the boardroom, I've seen it many times now, which is people are still wear lots of ties, especially the older gentlemen, which still looks like a fabulous finished look. But a lot of times in the younger settings, what they tend to do is they'll express themselves not necessarily through a tie, and they'll wear a poppy pocket square, something that really is bold or flashy. And also socks have become an explosive category throughout, where people really express themselves through these unique little patterns and things like that on a pair of socks, which has been great.
You had mentioned to me that you have the pocket patch, and you have sort of elements of that style, the suit structure style, that I didn't even notice, first of all, but now that you mentioned it, I do. So there's subtle things that are happening, too, with our fashion.
So exactly what you said. I always find that to be those subtle details are what really make it come together. I don't try and do too many things or too bold or too ostentatious, because mm-hmm. I feel like that comes across as too bold and too ostentatious.
Right.
So I really try and do little subtle details that show a complete look. And it shows that you're paying attention and you've got a signature style.
Are there colors or different styles for the fall that we should be aware of?
So typically in the fall, you're going into some earth tones and et cetera. You've got the browns and oranges. But a lot of guys don't like always wearing that. And so you can do those through those subtle details once again. So you might be wearing a navy blue suit, but you might have a shirt that has a blue and brown check. And so that pulls it in nicely, where you don't feel like you're completely getting out of your comfort zone, but you're stepping in that direction.
I like how you mentioned earlier that you have some shirts that have different button colors. Mm-hmm. How does that work? How do you do that?
So basically we can customize even the threading that either puts the button in there or mm-hmm. the button hole that's okay. there. And so if a client is open to that and they want to do those things, we typically encourage them to do that. However, at the same time, if somebody's like very straight-laced, we try and work with them and not get overwhelming, et cetera. So it's an art to be able to read a client and be able to figure out how deep do they want to go. And sometimes it can get overwhelming because guys obviously get overwhelmed. People in general get overwhelmed by too many choices. So you know, we train very hard and a lot of time in terms of being able to walk a client down a customer pathway that they feel comfortable, where things are getting done and moving along, but they're not feeling overwhelmed, which, trust me, is an art form.
Yeah, and guys don't like to answer a lot of questions either. That's seemingly, it seems like that. But so with that in mind, tell us how the process goes. Like if I were to come in, what do you say to your especially new clients to get them comfortable with this new custom process?
So we typically have a very casual conversation. We try and figure out what they do, what their lifestyle is like, how often they go out. And a lot of it you can tell by the questions that they ask. Mm-hmm. And so if you're paying attention, they'll ask questions that are either very detail-oriented. And sometimes, you know, guys are typically pretty upfront. They'll be like, I want to get really into this, and I want to, you know, explore these options, and I read about it online, and I've done a lot of research, and I've seen you guys, and et cetera. Or sometimes they'll just be like, I just want to look as best as I can. I'm in your hands. I don't want to make a bunch of decisions. Make me look good.
Yeah.
And so they're pretty candid, but, you know, good questions, good answers, and dig in quickly. And then what we try and do is we'll put out fabrics, and we won't overwhelm them. We'll just put out a few different fabrics they can choose from based on the information we got from that conversation. So we're not overwhelming them with a bunch of choices. After that conversation, we can streamline it pretty quickly.
You've been in business for half a century. Things must be going right. You must be doing the right thing. How much of that is adapting to the marketplace? And how concerned are you about some of the new online, for lack of a better word, tech-type startups where mm-hmm. you can do this stuff virtual reality?
So I can only take credit for the last 13 years. Right. My father started it in 1961, and I jumped in 2003. And so that was, you know, I was fortunate where that was where the market really started to grow faster and faster at that level. He obviously ran the ship for 44 decades, and he did it very successfully. But during that period, I would say it was fairly stable. You're correct in saying throughout the last 13 years since I've joined the business, things have changed pretty rapidly, which has been exciting for us. I mean, I think there's been a lot more competition in the marketplace. Things are changing. But the great news is the share of custom clothing has grown as a category rapidly. So there's enough for everybody to get where they want to go to. And at the same time, I think it drives all of us to be more innovative, creative, and have better customer service and better thought process about how to approach the business. In terms of the internet-specific custom clothiers that are out there, I feel pretty strongly about this, which is, you know, when they first came out, I was tempted to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I was tempted to, you know, put on our website that we would offer these things, but I resisted that temptation. And the reason I always felt like I wanted to shop, I'll take that back. I wanted to give our clients the experience of how I would want to shop. And I just could not see myself going online and picking out a custom suit. To me, that would be the equivalent of going to one of the best steakhouses in Chicago and getting takeout. That's not what you want. That's not the experience. It's part of the experience is having that experience of being at the restaurant, having the ambiance, having the customer service, interacting with the waiter, learning about the wine, learning about where the different ingredients come from, and having that full interaction. So it's ironic because what's happened is most of these custom clothiers that have started out online, now they're trying to open stores because they realize that. And it took a long time for them to figure out, and I think they spent a lot of money doing it. One of the things I'm really proud of is as we've grown and we've continued to become a leader in the nation in custom clothing, we've been able to do it without private equity. And so it's unbelievable that you would think of an industry like custom clothing, but there is so much private equity dollars out there now. And so I've been proud that we've been able to self-finance the growth and be able to do it just with disciplined profits and not making a lot of mistakes like, you know, moving down into that online side and then having to come back full circle. And that's a costly proposition.
And it sounds like you agree with some who I'm one of them, who look at all this retail consultancy and they say, oh, the, you know, brick and mortar is going away. I don't think it is in this area. Because I'm one of those people like you that I want to go in and have a sense of, at least initially, this is what it's going to feel and look like.
Yeah, so it's, you know, clothing and cloth is a very tactile experience. It's a very touch, right? So you,
sort of like steak.
It's sort of like steak. Right. You want to be able to have that full experience. And also, when you can't feel a piece of cloth through the internet, right? Maybe at some point they'll be able to get there, and then maybe I'll make that investment. But at this point, you're looking at an image, and I mean, you and I both know, and everyone knows that if you're looking at a different medium, so if you're looking at something on a Mac versus a PC versus your phone, et cetera, it's going to look totally different because the color pixels are different, et cetera, and you certainly can't get a feel for the touch. And so you might be surprised pleasantly or unpleasantly when you get it, and I don't think people want that. They would rather take a little bit of time, invest in it, and also have that better experience, similar to people taking time out of their Saturday to be able to go to a steakhouse. They want to take time out of their week, schedule it, and do it right.
Well, best of luck to you as you kick off the next 50 years, and thanks for keeping us looking sharp.
Ah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
CEO Sonny Bilani of Bilani Custom Clothiers in Chicago, thank you for being with us in the CEO Spotlight this morning. He looks so much better than I do with his jacket and coat on, and we appreciate you being in. Custom clothing is a real trend, and you should visit Bilani at Bilani Custom is where they're located on Twitter. They also have a blog you can follow as well. We're going to continue our discussion with Sonny after the bell and put more of it up online for you on our podcast later this morning. It's 5:31 on the opening bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. New research from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business finds that entrepreneurs who resist pressure to follow the leader are more likely to stay in a market, receive funding, and eventually go public. Research recently appeared in Administrative Science Quarterly. Chicago Booth Associate Professor of Organizations and Strategy, Elizabeth Ponticus, is one of the lead researchers, and she's with us from Booth. Professor, welcome to the opening bell. So the idea here is what, that entrepreneurs and investors should resist the temptation to follow the herd?
Well, really what is behind the effect that we find is that the entrepreneurs that go against the consensus put more thought and scrutiny into exactly what they're doing. And we think that's the mechanism that makes them more successful. So what ends up happening is people who follow the crowd, what we say is they overweight the potential of the market. So if you look at a market and you think, oh, wow, that's a hot market. It's so easy to succeed there. We're going to go there. It seems as if you can just go into that market and be successful regardless of what you actually do. Whereas the non-consensus entrepreneurs are forced to think a lot more about what we call product market fit. So does the product I have or the technology behind the product or any capability of the company, does that fit well with what people are looking for, with what the demand is in that market? And that's really, really important to success. And the consensus entrepreneurs, because they're focused so much on the market, they tend to focus less on that key piece of product market fit.
So our teachers were right when they told us that if you do your homework and do it well, you'll succeed. These entrepreneurs who are not following that consensus are doing a little bit more homework. Is that a fair way to describe it?
That's exactly the way to describe it. There is no substitute for thinking for yourself.
And if you could give us, is there a real world example of this that you can point us in?
Yeah, well, there's a few examples that we got from our interviews in the paper. So what happens a lot, which people have probably seen, let's say like the success of Uber. So a lot of investors and professors like myself get a lot of people who say, oh, I'm going to be the Uber of this market or the Uber of that market. And there's a lot of people who are rushing into this market because it's seen as being hot without really thinking about, do I have what it takes to compete against all of these other companies that are coming in? And so we've seen a lot of companies that are rushing in and failing. An example of a non-consensus entrepreneur would be, let's say, the online grocery market. So some people might remember Webvan from 2002, and they were supposed to be this huge success, and they were really a spectacular failure. And they built huge warehouses for online grocery. And since then, people have been really shy to get into the online grocery market, even though if you look at a lot of aspects of it, it really is a promising market. And what we've seen recently with companies like Instacart and like Amazon Fresh is that entrepreneurs are starting to get back in, thinking about what Webvan did wrong, how could they address that, and really tap into what is a market with high potential if it's done right.
It's interesting that you bring up the Uber reference, because in interviewing a lot of entrepreneurs and business types, I get that a lot, where they say, well, we're going to be the Uber of this, or they try to describe their effort as we're going to be the of this. And I immediately think, I hope you're not telling that to, you know, venture capitalists when you're selling them, because I really don't think we need another Uber. Is it sort of right. a failed thinking from the very beginning?
Yes. And, you know, I referenced Peter Thiel in his recent book, Zero to One, talks about this a lot, too, where he says the next Jeff Bezos won't create Amazon. And so what you have is, if you're a Me Too entrepreneur and you're doing something that someone else did, that's not where the big gains are to be had. The big gains are to be had in something that we haven't thought of already, or something that maybe hasn't been done well already, as the example of the online grocery market. So what ends up happening, entrepreneurship, it's become a little faddish in some ways. And what you have is entrepreneurs who are trying to come in and do something that's low risk. And so they say, oh, this market was hot, so I'm going to come do the same thing, and I'm going to become like Uber. And the reality is that entrepreneurship is inherently high risk. So you can't just come into a market and take it over and get everything that Uber got, precisely because Uber is already there. So let's say you're an entrepreneur who wants to create a search engine. Well, you might be able to create a search engine. Let's say you could do one that's better than Google. That's already a high bar. Well, even if you did that, Google's already there. So where are the gains? Where are the rewards in that strategy? The real strategy is to do something different that people haven't seen before and be successful in that. And when you couple those two together, that becomes a very risky proposition.
There's almost a real difference between the term entrepreneur and innovator, because the word innovator suggests that it's going to be something new and something that we haven't seen before. It's an innovation. And entrepreneur seems like, well, I'm just doing this to make a little bit of money. Is that a fair
yes.
way to describe it?
I think that is.
And so what would your advice be, based on your research then, to somebody who's thinking about getting into one market or another with a product or idea?
Well, first it would be, to your last point, it's not necessarily terrible to try to get into a market as a Me Too entrepreneur, but you do need to distinguish that you are not doing what you're calling the innovator. So if you want to be an entrepreneur that's more in our idea of what an entrepreneur is, creating something really new, that is not going to be the strategy that works. So back to my initial point would be, if you are an entrepreneur and you have a new idea, a new product, what you need to do is think carefully about exactly what that product does and how it can help people, and do your own research about where the demand is, first of all. And secondly, can you create demand? Can you put this product out there and have people understand what it does and all of a sudden want that product when they haven't wanted it before? So there are two things there. And that thought process of scrutiny and really critical thought about what you do and what people want is imperative to the entrepreneurial process. And these shortcuts that people take, saying, oh, there's a hot market, I'm going to just jump in there, is not the path to success.
Are there some potential negatives, though, to being the non-consensus entrepreneur, specifically if you think you've done all of your homework? Maybe you've done too much homework and you're maybe thinking you're alone in an area of thinking, or that you don't have all of the input. Can this sort of cave in on you?
Absolutely. And that's the risky side of it. Anything that has high rewards also has a high potential for loss. And what we have sometimes is people trying to avoid the loss but get the high rewards. And that's just an impossible thing to pursue. So what we have in a lot of cases, the entrepreneur who goes non-consensus can be wrong. One example was Webvan, where we said they failed in the online grocery market. A better example is the Segway. Do you remember how transformative the Segway was supposed to be?
We were all going to be riding around. The future, yeah.
Yeah, it was going to be the internet. We were all going to be riding around on Segways. Well, the Segway's still around, but it's really policemen and tour guides that use the Segways. So it hasn't been the big success that they expected it to be. And there's no way of predicting the future. What entrepreneurs need to do is go out, give it their best shot, and be willing to accept that in order to shoot for the stars, you have to entertain failure as well.
And when we talk about failure, it isn't necessarily failure for a company like Segway. I mean, they're doing well, not like you said to the stars, but still you may have to settle for something that's not the stars.
That's true. And so it's not a true failure, but there are investors that took a loss on that because they were expecting it. They were valuing it higher than it was. And so for them, they might consider that a failure.
Do you find that this is a prickly point, or in your research, have you found that this is a prickly point among venture capitalists who have money getting ready to invest and they hear these pitches with people being the consensus entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. So in our research, we find that venture capitalists do the same thing. They rush into these hot categories. But in every interview we conducted, venture capitalists would lament both other VCs engaging in this behavior and entrepreneurs doing this. One venture capitalist told me that they heard a pitch for someone to be the Coursera for the gardener. And this venture capitalist was saying, I don't know what that means. And so this kind of thing, when you're saying, I want to be the Uber for this market, they hear all the time. And frankly, it gets pretty boring for them.
There's also sort of an echo chamber, too, in this world, too, where you don't go out and solicit those voices that you may not hear as you put together your product or whatever your line is going to be. Is that another danger that we don't find enough unique voices out there in the wild?
Absolutely. So what will happen here where these markets are seen as hot is that once the conversation and the buzz gets going, one key part of our model is that the assessment is exaggerated. So people think it is hotter, that the market is hotter than it actually is, or that it is more difficult than it actually is. And what contributes to that is that everyone's talking and reinforcing in this echo chamber, and people who have dissenting voices often opt not to say anything rather than to get involved in maybe an argument about it. Another interview we conducted, the person said, well, we haven't chosen to invest in this area that we just don't think is valuable. And they said, I'm constantly engaged in conversations about why we haven't invested, why we don't see the potential.
Well, it's a very interesting research, and it's good of you to take time out. And we look forward to speaking with you again about some of this.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Chicago Booth Associate Professor of Organizations and Strategy, Elizabeth Ponticus, with us this morning on The Opening Bell.
Don't be a consensus entrepreneur. Don't be a consensus anything. It's always good to have your own style, don't you think, Susan Berkus?
I do. Style's a good thing.
Yeah, unless you're on the roads and traffic, and then probably you want to obey the laws.
Exactly. And that's so far so good. That's what people are doing. We're just seeing a slow up northbound through the Burns Circle.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures pointing a positive, up 52 points. S&P futures and NASDAQ futures higher as well. Let's get the latest on commodities. Good morning, Orion Tamuson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, a very busy weekend just ended, beginning Friday evening with a 95th birthday party surprise for Mr. D, Mr. Duchessois of Arlington Park Racecourse. And then Saturday night, Madison, Wisconsin, World Dairy Expo for the finale of the 50th anniversary of this great dairy show. And we were there to MC the activity when they named the grand champion, the supreme champion female of the World Dairy Expo, picked from the grand champions of the seven breeds that had walked through the show ring during the week. This year, the Jersey won the supreme champion title, and this was the second try. The cow named Musky Latola Martha E.T. was in the finals a year ago, didn't make it. But this year, she was picked supreme champion, exhibited by Milk Source Genetics of Kokona, Wisconsin, and bred by Musky Valley Farms Limited. She has scored excellent 94 at 5 years of age. So congratulations, and the Jersey breeders, very excited. The reserve grand champion, supreme dairy female, went to the Holstein champion. This week, we're looking to the October crop report due out Wednesday. And a reminder, because Columbus Day is a government holiday, we'll wait till tomorrow to get a report on harvest progress. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion, on the WGN Associated Bank calendar for today. Here's what's coming up that could drive the markets. There are no official government reports out today. The markets are open for business. Facebook plans to unveil what it calls Facebook at Work in London today. Also, we expect to see more reaction to today's Nobel Prize in Economics awarding. The 2016 Nobel Prize in Economics has been awarded earlier this morning to two folks who perfected contracts. Also, this is a big one. Put it on your calendar. It's the Big Pumpkin Way Off. They're going to name the annual biggest pumpkin on the planet, I guess, today. That's something that happens every October right before Halloween. We'll continue to follow your money, your pumpkins, all the way through the day on the Steve Cochran Show. Coming up next, we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.
Every day.
Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour.
The Chicago Conversation.
I'm Steve Bertrand in the WGN Newsroom.
News, traffic, weather, sports.
Now WGN Sports.
Never miss a story. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.